getting a view into the locker room that you don't normally see.
A sanitized view.
Not a natural scorer.
The honest opinion, he's not doing the job that they hired him to do.
I just disagree.
Accelerating your hockey learning curve. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
On the far side, the Jets go after it, trying to outnumber the Wild with three of them there. Edstrom falls down. It's played back toward the near side point, but the first one after it is Thornburg. He sends now Ehlers on a breakaway, who moves in, shoots, scores! Nikolaj Ehlers takes a breakaway pass off the boards from Thornburg, walked in and beats Dubnyk, and the Jets have a 3-1 lead.
Nikolaj Ehlers with the key insurance marker for the Winnipeg Jets yesterday afternoon as they defeated the Minnesota Wild by a 3-1 margin in front of many Winnipeggers making the trip down to Minnesota for the Black Friday matinee game. Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live on TSN1290.ca, good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you, getting you set up for tonight's Jets-Avalanche game, a 9 p.m. puck drop Central Time here in Winnipeg. Of course, the game will be heard live on this fine station. Alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. Gentlemen, that 3-1 victory for the Winnipeg Jets, am I overstating things when I say it was a key victory in the course of this Winnipeg Jets season, and it was probably their most complete defensive effort of the year yesterday afternoon versus the Wild?
Okay, well, before we get into yesterday's game, we're very excited. Happy Grey Cup weekend,
yes,
Drew.
Thank you.
Happy Grey Cup weekend to everybody, and happy day after Black Friday. Got to
It's not a holiday. You're just saying words now.
But I mean, you know, I know you did a lot of shopping yesterday, so I wanted to throw that in there, but
if anybody in this room did a lot of shopping on Black Friday, it's the stylish man across from me. It's Richard Pollock. He's the shopper way more than you or I are.
I shop for two new co-hosts. There's a lot of good options out there.
Now, Rich, I wouldn't be surprised if you're doing shopping because you're easily the best dressed. I'm clearly not the best dressed.
Well, I'm just happy you're dressed.
Yeah, exactly. I don't have the type of the repertoire that you have in the closet, so I just like to throw on whatever clean T-shirt I can find. But nonetheless, happy American Thanksgiving, and obviously there's tons of good stuff going on in the city for the Grey Cup. But yeah, Drew, it was
Merry Christmas, Happy New Year. You want to keep going here? Yeah.
Hanukkah's coming up, guys, in 1 week. So
don't forget about Kwanzaa.
Can you
get into the analysis of the game yesterday?
I'll get into the game. Here,
12 minutes into the show.
It was a good victory, Drew, and you mentioned, you know, how big of a victory that is considering that the Jets had lost 8 of their previous 10 games. And I really thought they simplified the game, and Shane Knighty even said that yesterday on the broadcast. I thought he analyzed and summed up the game pretty well because the Jets really made that look easy. And you mentioned, Drew, there was a lot of Jets fans down in St. Paul, but you know, the Jets got good goaltending. Obviously, the big story is Connor Hellebuyck. But to me, the biggest part of that story is yesterday that they beat a Wild team that really embarrassed them 2 or 3 weeks ago in Minnesota, going up 5-1. And I thought that the Jets really got everything they needed. All the ingredients were there for a good road win. They managed the puck well in their own zone. They didn't take too many penalties, and you know, it was balanced scoring. You know, they got some offense from Buff. You know, they get a bit of a lucky goal, but you got to give Buff credit because he sees that David Dubnyk is cheating a little bit. We've seen Buff do that before in overtime. So you got to give Buff credit. Ehlers gets off the schneid. He hadn't scored in 14 games. So I thought it was a real team effort. It was a gritty effort for an afternoon game. You could see that the Minnesota Wild came out completely flat. They only had 3 or 4 shots in the first period. I thought the Jets' worst period was actually the second period, which has actually been one of their best periods over the last 2 or 3 weeks, including all these losing streaks, right? So I thought they played really well. I thought Connor Hellebuyck going in really was a rallying point for this team. And you heard Buff talk about that, Richie, after the game. He said, you know, we wanted to make sure that we played really well defensively in front of Connor. And they did, Richie. Yeah. I thought Tobias Enstrom had one of his best games that I've seen him play in a while. I thought Tyler Myers was really good. And you got to throw in Matthew Perreault, gets a power play goal for the second game in a row. And he's another guy that's struggling. So to me, Hellebuyck is the big story, Richie, but it's also about a lot of players that were struggling offensively and they started to get it going. And then the Jets have started to clean up their play in their defensive zone too.
He's a big story in that they won and he got the win. And I think he's a bigger story because of what you just said, that the team rallied around him and played better team defense. So if they don't play team defense, they're done. And they may already be done. But they can play. They play a good team defense. They can get into this and back into it, and they have a lot of games in hand. Minnesota does on the Jets, and it is early. And Minnesota was way down last year, and they made a nice run. So the Jets, to me, need to play better defensively. Yesterday, I thought they played a very good game defensively. Strong through the neutral zone, didn't give up a ton of space. I thought their defensemen did an excellent job of not backing up off the line, confronting the Wild, who aren't as fast as you may think. At the defensive blue line, forcing turnovers. They played a nice, complete game. Connor Hellebuyck was solid. He faced probably one really good chance on the 2-on-1, and that was it. And don't blame him by any means. And by all accounts, I hadn't seen the guy play before, aside from a piece of the World Championships, and I can't make a judgment on that. I've heard only good things. Yesterday, I still can't make a judgment on. He seemed pretty good. He's obviously big, but we'll see in due time. But more importantly, if you're a Jets fan, you are very happy with the performance you had yesterday. Defensively, they weren't running around trying to create chances that weren't there. They weren't trying to run at the opposition when they were coming at them. And I thought, and those are basic concepts, but the Jets have not been playing a very structured game. Yesterday was a very structured game and their best game in a long time. Now, this is sports radio, of course. Yeah, but no.
Thanks for clarifying.
Well, but you know, Drew, 3 days ago,
we're on TV too, right?
Sky is falling. You know, today. Yeah. They're going to win the cup. That's a lot of times with the overreactions. That was a step in the right direction for this team, but they have dug themselves a significant hole, and they need to demonstrate to me at least that they can play that way for a consistent period of time. Not one game, not two games, not three, 10 games to play, because you're not going to win every game like that, but you're going to give yourself a chance to win. And sure, you know, Minnesota had some plays that just missed by an inch or two, but the Jets did as well. So I thought it was a solid game. But you have to be consistently playing that way to give yourself a chance because you don't have enough. There's a lot of things they don't have enough of, but they need to play that way. I'll leave it there.
Well, that's the kind of game that Paul Maurice wants. When Paul Maurice, that's a game that you would have said you saw last year time and time again. You know, textbook Paul Maurice style, opportunistic, responsible defensively first, and then letting everything come after that. I mean, they got good goaltending from Connor Hellebuyck, but like you said, he faced how many grade A chances? He only had 15 shots against him.
Yeah.
Full marks, though, for making the 14 saves and the fluke goal that goes in off Mark Stewart's leg. Sure. But, you know, for the Winnipeg Jets, for a team that's, you know, lacking in confidence, for a team that hasn't had the structure that you saw last year, even when they were winning to start the year, never saw this structure.
Yeah, start of the year, I thought they had a little bit of it. It was just kind of as if they won, but as they continued and were winning, they was fading.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you look at it, and the Jets have won, three of their last five games. You know, the winning against Vancouver and Arizona to start that homestand. Mm-hmm. But those games against Vancouver and Arizona didn't give them any confidence because they didn't play the right way. They played against lesser competition, and sure, they won, but nothing about it was pretty. Yesterday, in how simple they made the game for themselves, it was pretty. And it's something they can build on. Paul Maurice can take that video and say, play like this for the remainder of the season.
Yeah, easier said than done, but yeah.
Of course, easier said than done. But play like this against, against the other 29 teams in this league, and you have a pretty damn good chance.
I totally agree.
Yeah, and Drew, it's a coach's dream road game. It really is. You keep the score low scoring. Hellebuyck almost gets a shutout. I mean, the goal that was scored on him by Ryan Carter was not a pretty goal. So he, as Richie talked about, there was the Granlund chance 2-on-1.
That's right.
You know, Zach Parise coming back from injury. You know, he was a little bit sluggish. You know, he's still trying to find his legs. He gets a bit of a good scoring chance there. And so maybe there's three or four maybe good scoring chances, maybe even just those two. I mean, there was only 15 shots, right? But I think looking at where the Jets are now, they're 10 points behind the Stars. The Blackhawks won again yesterday, coming from behind on the Ducks. They're 4 points
behind. Bad loss for Anaheim on home ice yesterday, by the way.
There's been, unfortunately, too many of those, right, this year, Drew, for the Ducks and Bruce Boudreau. But I digress here, but the Hawks, they're 4 points behind the Hawks. They're still in sixth here, the Jets. But if you look at it, and I tweeted this out yesterday after the game, if you look at where the Jets were after 24 games last year, they were 12-9-2, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or does that math work out? 12-9-3.
12-9-3.
12-9-3. That adds up to 24.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I didn't even have to use a calculator for that.
Yeah, but so, your dad, the math professor, really isn't that happy about your mental
math
skills.
Sorry about that, Dad. The Jets are 11-11-2 now this season. So they're 3 points off of the pace they were at last year. And if you think about it, that's almost a little bit more impressive in a sense because of the poor start they had last year and the good start they had this year. And I don't mean that because I think if the Jets would tell you this, they'd say probably they'd rather start off slowly and start to get better. They've kind of regressed a little bit here, losing 8 of 10 before yesterday's win. But the point being that they're still right in the thick of the playoff race, right? To me, it's going to be between the Jets, the Wild, the Predators, and the Hawks for that last playoff spot. Because I don't think more than three teams are getting in from the Pacific. So I think the Jets are going to be battling with a team like the Wild. They still play them a couple more times. They've played the Wild 3 times now, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be between teams like the Wild and the Predators. And sure, you have the Canucks in there, and you have other teams in the Pacific that are trying to get back into it. But the point being, Drew, we've said this since the season started. We expect 5 teams to get in the Central. And that's why it makes winning tonight even more important, because you're going to be giving up
Colorado's,
points possibly to a team in your division.
Colorado's terrible. You have to beat Colorado.
Well, I mean, we said this last week.
I'm not changing the fact that they're terrible. You just said to beat them.
Yeah, that's fair. And we'll talk about the game against Colorado coming up next segment, and we'll be joined by Drew Spivak of ESPNDenver.com coming up in about 20 minutes' time. But, you know, to your point, Ezzy, the Jets know... You know, they can look at the Pacific Division and they can look at the teams there, but they don't. It's irrelevant. You know that you can't finish sixth in the Central Division, and because everything else is moot. So you know that one of the, you know, given Dallas's start.
Yeah, the Jets aren't catching Dallas or St. Louis this year.
Dallas is going to be a playoff team, barring some, you know, terrible injuries to, you know, Ben and to Sagan and to Spezza. They're going to be a playoff team. So you look right now and you know that, okay, one of the teams that in the Central Division that was a playoff team last year isn't going to be in there this year. And now you have to just, you're battling in your division night in, night out. I know it's only 24 games, but it truly isn't too early to watch the scoreboard in the Central Division to see how your, you know, chief opponents are doing.
The problem for the Jets is those games in hand right now.
Mm-hmm. Which Chicago only has one in hand. So it's the Wild who have the 3 games in hand.
Yeah, I know. One in hand, again, 4 points up,
yeah.
Or 1 point up, but 3 games in hand. Not insignificant. I'm just saying if you extrapolate that over the, mm-hmm. the points that they would be earning over those games, you're looking at bigger gaps. It's not insurmountable, guys, but as we talk about the Thanksgiving marker, people talk about it all the time, the Thanksgiving marker, it's not, your odds are certainly not great if you're at yesterday's point or today's point. And you're not in the playoffs.
Yeah, that's why having those extra couple points are so huge. Nashville loses yesterday. Chicago wins. So you keep pace with Chicago. You pick up some points on Nashville. Those are two teams, as we talked about, they're going to be chasing all year. But I think, Drew, there's some encouraging signs if they play with that type of structure that we really haven't seen since the beginning part of the season. I haven't seen that type of structure in a game since the Jets went into, for example, MSG early in the season and really had a nice game, victory against the Rangers.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we've seen that, and they've been struggling to get that. And if they play similarly to the way they played yesterday, they should be able to beat the Avalanche, because as we've talked about quite a bit this year, the Avalanche are essentially a one-line team. Sure, you know, Jerome McGinley's having a pretty good year, but aside from Duchesne, Landeskog, and McKinnon, there aren't too many guys that are putting the puck in the net right now. You know, and they've got some good offensive defensemen, but they're still a mess defensively. So, as Richie said, you should be able to get a couple of points here if you play similarly, and then you get a nice little rest, and then you've got the Leafs on Wednesday at home. So things are setting up nicely. You're starting to take less pressure or have less pressure on yourself.
Yeah, you get into a winning streak, and everything good will come at that point in time. So it'll be interesting to see how the Jets piggyback on yesterday's very impressive performance against a good Wild team tonight against an Avalanche team that should still have a sour taste in their mouth from Monday's defeat.
They should beat Colorado and Toronto,
mm-hmm.
But it's the fashion in which, in my opinion, that they do beat them if they beat them, how you judge the next 2 games after being Washington or Chicago.
Yeah.
Do you play like you did last night, at least a reasonable facsimile to that, or do you revert back to kind of Arizona, Vancouver, where you're taking some chances and you could nip in the bud there?
You know, we talked about quickly, Drew, mm-hmm. you know, I know you want to go to break here, but the Shifley-Ehlers-Perreault line was obviously really good, but I also thought that the Ladd-Little-Wheeler line deserved a lot of credit. I thought they outplayed the Wild's top line. quite badly. And I thought Little obviously had a great screen on the first goal by Matthew Perreault. I thought that those guys really had a strong game because, as we saw against Washington, that wasn't a very good performance. So I thought they bounced back really well. And as a team, I thought they bounced back really well. You know, I mentioned Enstrom and Myers. I thought they had a really good game last night, so or yesterday afternoon, I should say. So I think you got to give those guys credit. The top players showed up, and it was kind of one of those games that you kind of just grinded out a win, and that's what they needed to do.
When we come back from commercial break, we'll answer the question, who should be the Jets' starting goaltender tonight versus the Colorado Avalanche? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.
Stafford bumps with his man, came away with the puck, trying to put it into where the slot, intercepted there by Landeskog. He left it for Barry. Headman pass for Duchesne. Partial break, moves in, lets a backhander go. He scores. Matt Duchesne along the ice five hole beats Hutchinson, and it's 3-1 Colorado.
Matt Duchesne scoring against the Winnipeg Jets and Michael Hutchinson this past Monday. In a game at MTS Center, a game the Jets certainly expected to win, controlled for a lot of the game, but ultimately did not come away with 2 points. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, a proper-fitting, custom-made mouth guard is a must-have piece of protective equipment. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center, 204-487-2226, or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. So, gentlemen, before we get into the nuts and bolts, let's say, of tonight's game against the Colorado Avalanche, 9 p.m. puck drop here on TSN 1290, Hellebuck on the back-to-back or Hutchinson in net for the Jets tonight?
Well, I think it's a little bit more tricky of a question than you think would think, guys, right? Because Connor Hellebuck, it was a little bit of a surprise that he started yesterday afternoon as opposed to today, right? We knew that he'd probably start one of those games. Actually, Paul Maurice said that Connor Hellebuck was going to play one of those games. But Connor Hellebuck goes in against Minnesota, plays really well. He might have only faced 15 shots, but I think there's something to be said for putting Hellebuck back in there. You have an afternoon game the day before, and then the next day you have a game that's a little bit later at night, right? So it's not like it's as close of a back-to-back as you could be sometimes playing Richie, but I don't think they're going to go with Hellebuck here this afternoon. I don't think, tonight, they haven't announced it yet. I think they'll go back to Michael Hutchinson just because it'd be kind of tough to start your career with two back-to-backs. It should be said, though, Connor Hellebuck has played back-to-backs in the AHL. So he does have back-to-back experience at the pro level. Granted, it's not at the NHL level. So I would still say you go back to Michael Hutchinson. And I know Michael Hutchinson struggled really, really bad against the Washington Capitals, letting in 5 goals. I didn't think all of those goals were his fault, but certainly you could say a couple of those he'd probably like to have back, Richie. And I know you were doing the pre and post, so you'll be able to chime in there. But I think that the odds of Hellebuck starting are fairly low. But I think it's something to maybe discuss, because I think when you have a goalie that you know is going to possibly push for that number one spot, and there's no reason to believe that if Connor Hellebuck plays really well, Rich, and Hutchinson continues to struggle, he might get the majority of the starts. Maybe not now, but maybe a month from now, if Pavlik is out longer than maybe we anticipate, and you never know with injuries, especially knee injuries, right? So I would expect Hutchinson to play, but I think there's something to be said for maybe putting the kid back in there and see how he does in Colorado.
Yeah, I mean, I thought they'd probably go with Hutchinson yesterday and Hellebuck today. So obviously this changes things in terms of now you have Hellebuck with the win. That gives you a different perspective on it. Teams had trouble winning. Yeah, the fact, I know it's back-to-back, and I know it's in the thin air of Colorado. Having said that, I don't think either goalie's particularly tired. Hutchinson's a backup. And Hellebuck's been playing, you know, a fair amount with the Moose, but Kami's also been getting in. So if I gotta go back to Ezzy's point in the first segment, I think that I think Dustin Byfuglien spoke to it. You know, if they played better defense as a team because Hellebuck was in there, then go ahead and give him a chance again. And why not?
It's not like he was especially hard yesterday.
He hardly did anything yesterday. Colorado's terrible. So they have that one line is really going to hurt you, and that one first power play unit that's really going to hurt you. Doesn't mean you don't have to defend against the other players, but you're giving him a soft matchup. So, sure, go for it. I think just based on the fact this team can't defend right now, at least before yesterday, and if they can build some momentum off the defending yesterday, try it again.
What effect, if you go Hellebuck back-to-back, what effect does that have on Michael Hutchinson and his confidence going forward?
It does have an effect, and that's what I was saying with Rick on, I think it was Wednesday, you know, this is your backup. He thinks he's going to get a shot. I think if they had a couple more points, they'd probably go to Hutchinson and give him a little bit more of a, although they're all tied together, of course, in reasoning, but they give him a little bit more of a shot. Here, we talked about it last segment. I mean, the points are at a premium. And if they think that Hellebuck gives them the best chance to win tonight, they have 3 days off after this, and then they have, another 2 days off after the next game. So they're not playing a lot of games in the next little while.
No, they got between now and the two games between now and next Saturday.
So, well, I'd say, I guess the question you have to ask, Drew, is how concerned are they about that? I mean, you have to think they might be. They would be concerned in the sense that Pavlik's out long term if Hellebuck does struggle, and eventually he will, whenever that happens, young goalie. Not that Hutchinson's that old, but you know, in terms of experience, you're gonna have to go back to your guy, and if he doesn't have confidence, you might be in trouble.
Ezzy, what do you think about the effect on Hutchinson if you go with Hellebuck back to back?
So, Richie, you're saying that you think Hellebuck's gonna start, or he should start?
For the record,
I actually think both.
That he should start and that he will start.
Yeah.
For the record, Paul Maurice, obviously they met with the media. No game day skate for the Jets today. So Paul Maurice refused to confirm a goaltender. So we probably won't know until, close to 6:30, 7 o'clock, who the goaltender is going to be in net for the Winnipeg Jets.
Well, it's a coin flip right now, and Richie could be right because we just don't know. As you mentioned, there's no game day skate because they played yesterday. But I think there's something to be said for putting a goalie back in who played really well in his debut. So if they end up going with Hutchinson, doesn't mean that Richie's wrong as far as his assessment of Connor Hellebuck and earning that second consecutive start. It just means that Paul Maurice has his reasons for going back to Hutchinson. Hutchinson has more experience. Hutchinson hasn't played since Wednesday, so he's more rested. And maybe he wants to get him back on the winning track against, as Richie said, a team that is last in the Central Division, one of the worst teams in the Western Conference right now. And by the way, I'm surprised, and I know we'll have a chance to talk to Drew Spivak about it next segment, but I really thought this Colorado team would be better. Now they're looking at a situation where they're probably going to be a seller if they don't turn their season around, Drew, leading up to the trade deadline. And we talked about Matt Duchene a couple weeks back with Adrian Dater. There's a lot of players on that team that I think other teams would like to maybe make a trade and acquire one of these guys, because even though the Colorado Avalanche right now are kind of a bit of a work in progress, and I really anticipated them being more competitive on a nightly basis. You still have a lot of talented players there. And, you know, Eric Johnson and Tyson Barrie are obviously their best defensemen, but you've got young prospects, you've got draft picks coming in. So it'll be interesting to see, but they got to turn it around. And it's a big, don't make any mistakes about it. It's a big game for Colorado too, right, Richie? Saturday night. I mean, they need this one to keep pace.
They're done.
They're not mathematically done. They're not looking good right now, so they need these points just as bad as Winnipeg does.
Sure, that's true. They do need those points. I was throwing it to Drew. I don't know if I threw it to you off air, Drew. I think it was off air. We talked about Patrick Waugh a few weeks ago. After watching them in person, guys, I mean, do you think he has anything to work with there?
No, there's nothing there. And so I was wrong.
Well,
I'm not saying I need you to say wrong.
Yeah, I know. I wouldn't say
there's nothing there. I think the makeup of the team. I don't think they're quick enough, and I think the defense has been a problem since going back to last year. I mean, guys, this is a team, as we know, that won the division 2 years ago with 15 points or whatever it was.
Yeah, good goalie.
So, I mean, you still got Nathan MacKinnon, one of the best young forwards in the game. Matt Duchene is one of the best young forwards in the game. Landeskog. I mean, Iggy, even though he's nearing the end of his career, he's still producing. I mean, they have pieces there. But that defense, as Rich has mentioned quite a bit on the show, they have trouble moving out of their own zone.
Their bottom four lines aren't any good either.
Well, that's right, too. They've struggled to kind of generate offense after four or five players, right? They're top heavy. Yeah. So it's a team right now that I think has some pieces. For example, I don't know if this is a complete rebuild situation.
Well, no. Anytime you got Duchene and Landeskog and MacKinnon, you don't really need to complete the rebuild. You just need to... You need to shore up some of your bottom six forwards and your bottom four defensemen, I would suggest. It's not a complete rebuild by any stretch. Going back to the goaltending question for another one here. You know, the Avalanche had success against Hutchinson on Monday. You know, there's a book on Michael Hutchinson throughout the NHL, of course, because he's been in the league now for a little over a year. Hellebuck is an unknown quantity. Sure, there's some scouting reports from, you know, I think their AHL affiliate, I think, is Lake Erie, if I'm not mistaken. So they might have an idea about Hellebuck from there. But these guys haven't seen Hellebuck in game action. Don't you want to sort of ride with that unknown quantity, you know, that the teams aren't able to really get an analysis on a goaltender for as long as possible?
Yeah, yes, maybe, Drew. I think that's a bit overstated. You call, as you mentioned, you call your AHL affiliate, you get the scouting report on the netminder, you tell them the few weak spots, and the players try and hit those targets if they can. How many times in the game are you going to get the opportunity to even hit those targets? Last game, they had two or three.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I see the point, but I'm not so sure. I mean, Christian Follin played on his team back, Hellebuck's team, in college. So, I mean,
Christian Minnesota. Follin of the Wild, you're
so
saying.
So he had a book on him, right? Of course, played them practice every day. He knows where he's weak and where he's strong. Still got to get to those spots and be able to. Still got to get to the open spot to have the shot at the glove.
Sure.
You know what I mean? If that's his weakness.
Their AHL affiliate is actually the San Antonio Rampage. Pardon me.
They change all the time. Yeah. That's been San Antonio's been, I think, Arizona and Florida's affiliate in the past 10 years.
Yeah,
that's right. I mean, a lot of AHL franchises have changed this year, especially with the creation of that California division, right? So, an honest mistake, Drew. But back to the point about goaltending, I think whether they go with Connor Hellebuck, sure, that is something to consider. That you're bringing in a guy that they haven't had as much time, possibly to scout, Hutchinson being a guy who's been in the division the last couple of years. That's something to factor in. But again, it all comes back to the way they play defensively. If they keep playing with that type of structure and that type of patience and discipline, stay out of the penalty box, don't take too many penalties, they'll be fine tonight, because I think they've shown that they're starting to get out of the slump, I think. I think that slump is something that they'd like, at the very least, to be in the rearview mirror, right?
Well, yesterday was a good start. The question is, can you piggyback on yesterday today? And it's,
right.
I mean, it's almost, if you don't, it's almost one step forward, two steps back. And that's the Jets. I'm certain that's, you know, the Jets themselves know that and want to embrace that as well. Because, you know, you won 2 of 3 on that homestand, but just by losing that game last Monday against the Avalanche, it was one step forward, two steps back. You don't want to repeat that, 6 days later. Let's head to break. When we come back, Drew Spivak from ESPNDenver.com and ESPN Radio in Denver will join us to talk about the Avs. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Saturday afternoon here on TSN 1290, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mindell alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program from ESPNDenver.com. He also does radio in Denver as well on 105.5 ESPN Radio. Drew Spivak. Drew, good afternoon and welcome to the program.
Hey, absolutely, guys. Thanks for having me. Appreciate you having me on again.
Our pleasure. Drew obviously brought you on to talk about tonight's Jets-Avalanche game in Denver, coming up in about 5.5 hours' time until puck drop. Avalanche, you know, at the bottom of the Central Division, 8-13-1. They did defeat the Jets here in Winnipeg earlier this week. You know, are the Avalanche sort of a team in need of going on a run, or is it already almost too late and it's a bit of a lost season in Colorado already?
You know, there's a big part of me, I think, that feels like it's already way too late for that as well, or as bad as this team is kind of started out the season, and then you look at the depth within that Central Division, it almost looks like it'd be pretty impossible to make a deep run or make any sort of run in this thing. But I guess theoretically, if they get hot and they can go on a 15 game point streak, which seems pretty unlikely, they could possibly do it. But there's really been nothing from this team this year that maybe even suggests that they could make any sort of a run. They've just been so inconsistent. I think they've only got one winning streak of more than three games this year. And so it's just been a lot of inconsistency for this team. You feel like there's points where they start to get it together and they're starting to kind of get on a roll here like they did at the beginning of that 7-game road trip that they just had. And then they go out and then they lose 3 in a row after winning 3 straight. So it's just a lot of inconsistency and a lot of back and forth. And everybody always talks about the kind of the cutoff here at American Thanksgiving, which was 2 days ago. And if you're not in the playoff race by then your odds of making it in aren't very good. So it's going to be a real steep climb, and this team's going to need kind of a maybe even a historic type of a run if they really want to get seriously back in the playoff conversation.
Drew, we didn't have a chance to have you on a couple of weeks ago after those Matt Duchene trade rumors started swirling around. And since those trade rumors, he went on a 7-game point streak. I guess, is it safe to say that now that he's gone on that point streak, he's realized that maybe he doesn't want to get traded and he wants to stay in Colorado?
Yeah, I think so. I think so for sure. And I think with Matt Duchene, he's always been a guy that he's never wanted to get traded. He's always wanted to be here. He said, you know, he's come out on multiple occasions, said Colorado's where I want to be. He has no desire to be here. But, you know, I think some people maybe look at it as maybe a bit of a, you know, leak by the Avalanche. Maybe it was something that came from the front office and they were trying to do it to maybe light a spark under this team as the road trip got underway, because that road trip was going to be a kind of huge tipping point to see, okay, is this team, you know, just going to kind of falter? Are we going to have to make some sort of moves in this thing? And Matt Duchene's name, I think, got thrown out there. Whether it was, you know, done intentionally or not, I'm not sure. But, you know, he responded. Once his name got out there, he responded in a big-time way. He's playing fantastic hockey right now. And, you know, he's moved to the wing. He's playing alongside Nathan MacKinnon and Gabriel Landeskog on that top line there. And that's been one of the better lines in hockey over the last couple of weeks here. So the rumors have definitely quieted since it kind of came out and he got hot here. But it was definitely kind of interesting to hear it get thrown out there in the first place.
Drew, what is it? You know, the Avs came through town. Obviously, we spoke about it, you know, last week. And you see that there's obviously a lot of skill on the top end, but there's a lack of depth. What are Patrick Roy and Joe Sakic evaluating now? I mean, you spoke to the fact that it's going to be awfully difficult to make a run even into the playoffs here. So there's lots of the season left, which is tough if you're an Avalanche fan. But what is the brass looking for? What are they trying to evaluate more than maybe something else?
Yeah, I still think they feel like they can make a run in this thing. I don't think that they think that they're done at all. But it's going to come down to, you know, goaltending for this team. And what is this team? Can the defense step up and kind of be a better defensive core? I mean, because we've talked about this the last couple of years, guys, just how bad this defensive core is for the Avalanche. And I think Patrick Roy is finally starting to get a better idea of guys he can put out there defensively and guys that he couldn't, because for so long he was running out naked. And then Brad Stewart, when they acquired him last year. And, you know, these are two guys that, quite frankly, just they can't play in this league anymore. They can't play night in and night out in this league. And they get beat and they get owned, especially a guy like Nate Gannon, who's been one of the worst statistically defensemen in the NHL for the last couple of years now. And I think Patrick Roy's finally starting to realize that. And he's going with guys that I think give him a better chance to win, guys like Zach Redmond and Brandon Gormley and players like that. So I think they're kind of looking to see who's going to kind of step up. But the big thing for these guys is that, you know, they've got to get more depth. They've got to find a way to get some more depth at the forward position. I mean, because we talked about that top line there being so good. But then you look below that, and they're really not getting a ton of production, especially from the bottom six. And when you're rolling out guys like Cody McLeod and Jack Skilly and, you know, Dennis Everberg, who had just gotten sent down yesterday down the AHL, it's real hard to kind of evaluate that. So, you know, I think in a way this organization's kind of in a transitional time mode where they're looking towards next season, to where some of these guys that are down in the AHL right now in San Antonio defensively can come up and make some sort of difference, whether it be a Chris Bieghorst or a Duncan Siemens or a Mason Gertsen, guys like that. I think they feel like they have some depth within the organization, but it's kind of a wait-and-see type game with this organization right now.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is Drew Spivak, who covers the Colorado Avalanche for ESPNDenver.com and 105.5 ESPN Radio in Denver. Drew, I want to talk about Nathan MacKinnon. He obviously burst onto the scene, first overall pick back in 2013. All the talent in the world, we know that. Had a great rookie year, 63 points. Last year, a bit of a down season. Sure, there was an injury as well. But this year, he's really picked it back up. He's over a point a game. Are we beginning to see sort of Nathan MacKinnon and harness all of his skills together and, you know, sort of become the dominant force that everyone expected he would be when he was taken first overall?
Yeah, I think so. He's really seemed to put it together this year. He's been really fun to watch. You know, he's added some size to him. He just looks bigger, stronger. The speed's always been there for him, and he's kind of just putting it all together here. And I think kind of the big thing is that, you know, Patrick Roy put him in a position to succeed now. And, you know, last year there was a lot of the question, well, is he a center or is he going to be a winger? I mean, where are they going to go with this? And, you know, is he a second-line guy? Is he a top-line guy? I'm not sure they really knew kind of what he was last year. And so I think there was a lot of instability within, you know, just within his game itself to try and figure out what kind of a player he's going to be. But, you know, coming into training camp this year, Patrick Waugh said, hey, he's going to be a center. He's going to be one of the guys in the top six, and we're going to rely on him and put him in a position to succeed. And he's done that this year. No matter who he's played with and what, you know, whatever line combination you want to put him in, he's been the center all season long. And it's been fun to watch because he's really turned his game on and becoming that kind of, you know, offensive force that I think everybody expected from him. Now, I think defensively, he still has quite a ways to go. He still makes, you know, a lot of big mistakes in the neutral zone and in the defensive zone. But that's one of those things where you kind of say, all right, well, he's still young. He's still learning this game and trying to figure out, you know, how to be good defensively in the NHL. And I think eventually he'll get there. But if he can keep providing the offensive punch that he has throughout this season, I think there's going to be a time here soon where Nathan MacKinnon is going to be talked about as one of the elite players in the NHL.
Yeah, and I don't think he's very far away, and he's definitely racking up the points this year, and he's been one of the bright spots for the Avalanche this year. Drew, wanted to ask you about something that you tweeted out a couple of days. You embedded a tweet from Slava Malamud talking about Alex Radulov and how he rejected CSKA's, the team that he played for last year. He offered, rejected their offer, and he could become a free agent. And one of the teams he's been linked to is the Colorado Avalanche because he was, of course, coached by Patrick Waugh in junior. What do you think the chances of Alexander Radulov becoming a member of the Avalanche?
It seems like it'd be a good fit. I mean, it seems like if you connect the dots with everything, with Patrick Waugh being his former coach back in junior and you know, kind of the needs of this organization, it kind of seems like it'd be a fit. And, you know, we heard all summer long around here in Denver that the Avalanche made a move to sign him and that they'd already had something worked out. Obviously, that didn't come to fruition. But it just seems like one of those things where if you kind of connect the dots, it all kind of seems to link together where he'd be a perfect fit for this organization, the kind of player that he is and where he fits, you know, within the organization or within kind of the depth chart and stuff like that. And that's something the Avalanche need. They've got to add more depth to this team because they're so thin once you get past that top line. So it seems like it'd be a pretty good option as to whether or not he actually, you know, he makes the move over here and if Colorado can get something done with him, I think it remains to be seen. But I think if I had to put the odds on it, I'd say it's probably fairly a decent chance that he ends up in Colorado if he does make the move over here.
Drew, Jerome Iginla, you know, we saw him come through town. It looked like his family actually was at the game in Winnipeg there. He's 38 years old now. He has that no trade clause. It appears, again, you know, that the Avs are likely going to miss the playoffs this year. He does have a year left on his deal, and he has made some comments that he may not waive the no trade clause. Can you speak to that? And in your mind, do you think that the Avalanche would like to deal him if they're out of it at the deadline and if he'd actually accept the trade?
Yeah, I mean, I think they'd probably like to deal him ideally, you know, send him off to a team that gives him an opportunity to, you know, finally go out there and get a Stanley Cup because, you know, he's a guy that's been around the block a long time and he's not getting any younger. We've seen it this year that, you know, he hasn't been as good this year as he has been the last couple of years and it's been a little bit of a struggle for him this year, but he has come out and said, he's like, I don't want to move my no trade or, you know, waive my no trade clause. His family likes it here and I think part of the reason that he signed with Colorado in the first place was that, you know, his family looked at kind of the lifestyle here in Colorado with the schools and then the youth hockey organizations out here, and they thought that this would be a really good fit. So he kind of seems like the type of guy that, you know, wants to put his family first in this situation and not want to move him in the middle of the season, even if it were to a contender. You know, the first one that kind of comes to mind is Montreal. It seems like that would be kind of a perfect fit for him. But, you know, I think maybe if the right situation came up, I think there's a chance they could get him to waive it, but you know, at this point, it doesn't look like that's probably going to be an option for the Avalanche, even though I think they'd probably like to move him if they had their way.
Drew, we'll let you go on this last question. You know, Semyon Varlamov, when they acquired him from the Capitals a couple years ago, you know, he was putting up some really good numbers, 2013-14, 927 save percentage, 2.41 goals against. This year, numbers are bad. You can't really sugarcoat them. 890 save percentage, of 3.22 goals against. Is that his own play, or are those poor numbers a function of his own play, or a function of the defense that's in front of him?
You know, I think you could probably put it on a little bit of both, but at the same time, it's kind of, you know, one of those things where he's played in front of a bad defense really the last 3 years here in Colorado. And, you know, you go back to a couple of years ago when he was an MVP candidate and one of the top goalies in the NHL, he played out of his mind that year. And you're thinking, okay, well, this could be the start of something really big for him. And, you know, last year he struggled with injuries and struggled with consistency, never quite found it. And you're thinking, okay, well, this year he came into camp healthy. We thought he was going to be good to go. And he just, there's something off about his game, and it almost seems like it's kind of a confidence thing. I was really trying to watch him a lot the other night in the game on Wednesday against Ottawa. He doesn't look like the same kind of confident, even cocky kind of goaltender that we're used to seeing from Semyon Varlamov, and I think it's affected him. And Patrick Waugh came out and said that he has to be the best player on this team, which I think that kind of maybe speaks a little bit to the way this organization is structured, maybe to a fault to begin with. But, you know, Semyon Varlamov has to be at his best if this team is going to have any sort of chance to go anywhere this season. And he's got to step his game up because, you know, they really need him to do this, and it's not like you look at a guy like Red O'Barrow who, yeah, he had about 2 weeks there where he played some pretty good hockey, but throughout his career, Red O'Barrow has not been a guy you can rely on to play consistently. So he definitely has to get better, and I know kind of some of the trade rumors are swirling a little bit around Semyon Varlamov, but you look around the league and you think, well, okay, what team needs a goaltender that's not playing his best right now that's making, you know, almost $6 million a season? It'd be hard to kind of move on from that point in time. But I think next year is going to be something where it's going to be interesting to watch with him, because Joe Sakic has already said that Calvin Pickard, who has played really well in the AHL, he's played really well in the NHL when he's been up here. Sakic has already said that he's going to be on this roster next year. So basically you're going to have three goaltenders under contract, and one of them is going to have to move. And it seems like the most likely candidate in that scenario would be Semyon Varlamov, but it would definitely help the Avalanche if he could really pick it up and get his game going a lot more.
Drew Spivak covers the Colorado Avalanche for ESPNDenver.com. You can also hear him on 105.5 ESPN Radio in Denver. Drew, really appreciate your time this evening. Thanks very much for joining us, and enjoy tonight's Jets-Avalanche game.
Hey, anytime, guys. It's been a pleasure as always. Thanks for having me.
Take care, Drew. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll start our evaluation of the Winnipeg Jets players individually, if they're matching our expectations or below our expectations thus far this season.
Keep it in. Perreault right side point again. Perreault stick handling. Cross ice pass. Little shot. Stop. Rebound. They score. Andrew Ladd with the putback. And the Jets get a power play goal. It's 2-1. Winnipeg.
Big thanks to Drew Spivak of ESPNDenver.com for joining us to preview tonight's Jets Avalanche game, in case you missed any of it. It'll be available for download on iTunes. It'll be on TSN1290.ca and on our website, IllegalCurve.com. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com, and be sure to check out and try out the Illegal Curve sandwich available at Bernstein's Deli. Gentlemen, spend the next little while discussing the individual Winnipeg Jets players and if they have exceeded our expectations so far this season, matched our expectations, or are below our expectations. A lot of people handing out grades at the quarter mark. We're not going to do grades. We're going to say plus one if you've exceeded, a zero if you've matched, or a minus one if you're below our expectations. We also want to hear from you. You can chime in on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Let us know who has matched, exceeded, or is below your expectations here on the Winnipeg Jets.
Or if you've got Richie's cell number, text him. Let us know what you think.
Richie, do you want to give out your cell number to the people?
No.
Okay, I didn't think so. I'm not sure why he brought that as an option, but whatever.
Or text me.
Okay.
But Richie has more numbers in his phone. I only have like maybe five people texting me on a regular basis, and
three of those people are debt collectors.
Yeah, yeah. I'm surprised you didn't lose your phone, because you left a charger in the studio for 2 to 3 weeks, decided to look at it each week, buy a new charger,
and then
find the charger today and put it in your bag and say that you were just going
to
keep both.
You know what?
Chargers.
Shout out to the guys on the Big Show, because I know if Leibel saw that, he probably would have just taken it home. But I know that Westy probably saw that, knew that it was mine. He knows
that
I've left it here.
Team player.
Yeah, so shout out to them. Brandon, too, I think would look out for me, but not Leibel. Leibel wouldn't look out for me.
Can't blame Leibel there, really. Let's start with the forward group. We'll start with the Jets captain, Andrew Ladd. Has he matched your expectations? Has he exceeded your expectations? Or is he below your expectations to start this year?
I mean, he's been below, Drew. I mean, he led the league, led the team in scoring last year, put up 62 points. You look at him this year, 15 points in 24 games. I mean, that only says so much about the production. Obviously, points are that one you're going to lean on. But he just hasn't been, I think, he's been a little bit more mobile this past couple of games. Maybe the injury is a factor, but he has been better for sure, and I think the Jets need him to be better. I think he's been below expectations through the first part of the season.
Yeah, Ladd is below expectations for me, and Richie mentions that everybody knows that he's got 15 points, and that's a little bit below, even though he's probably still on pace to be around 55 points, right? A little bit off of last year. But I think it's more so than just the offensive production, Richie. As you mentioned, I think Andrew Ladd has struggled with consistency, just the physical game, his impact on games. I think he's gotten some big goals for this team. You know, he's got a game winner, and he's certainly been part of the best line for the Jets, even though, you know, Scheifele and Ehlers and Perreault and that line has been good. And then now Stafford has joined that second line. That's been a good line, especially earlier in the season. So for me, it's below, because I'd like to have, you know, have Ladd there with more goals. And then you could say, okay, he's really chipping in, but it's really been Blake Wheeler and Brian Little, I think, that have been driving that line. And you got to wonder if that contract extension or lack thereof is starting to factor in. But it seems like Andrew Ladd is a little bit off, at least early on this season.
So both of you would give him a minus one based on him being below your expectations, the expectations that you had for the player entering the season. So we'll do this at the quarter mark of the year. We'll do it halfway through, and we'll do it three quarters and then at the end of the season to see how the transition has occurred throughout the course of the season.
Let's Brian Little. Let's see if you remember to do that.
Yeah, that's actually the real difficult part, and if I don't remember to do it, I'll get a minus one in expectations. Brian Little.
Actually, it'd be a zero.
Brian Little. Thanks, Richard.
Yeah, Drew, we'll give
that
you a,
way
too
easy,
we'll give you a minus 25.
That was a fastball right down the middle.
And you knocked it out of
by J.A. Happ.
Yeah, we'll talk about we'll leave that
just
signing.
I know you'd get you going on that one.
I know. I don't understand the signing of J.A. Happ by the Blue Jays.
Leave it to the big show, Drew.
I'll leave it to them.
And H&L.
Yeah. I'm on with Hustler after today, so I can chime in.
Are you H&D?
H&D or Two Live Drews, as I've wanted to call it.
Oh yeah, because Andrew, yeah,
Andrew
right.
Drew.
Yeah.
My real name's Andrew. It all works. Brian Little, minus one.
I've got him even. I've got him even. I think, you know, Brian Little, you expect he's your number one center. You expect him to be one of your most consistent offensive performers, and he has been. You know, he's got a couple of shorties this year, kind of making up for Blake Wheeler, who was getting all those shorthanded goals last year, even though Wheeler's also got one. But Brian Little's been excellent. Can go out there in all situations, Drew. Power play, penalty kill, one of their top face-off guys. So Brian Little, to me, has met expectations. He's always someone that you can rely on night after night.
I agree. I think Yazzie's assessment's very accurate.
Blake Wheeler, moving on very quickly there. Blake Wheeler, we'll start with you, Richie, on Blake Wheeler.
You know, I grapple between going meeting expectations to exceeding them. I'm going to say exceeding them right now. Just because, and I said it on the show earlier in the season, I thought he wasn't playing particularly well. I'm still putting up points, and that's a sign of real good production, right? And he's just been moving so well, skating, driving the line's production, especially with Ladd lagging, right? And we've talked about Little being consistent, but Ladd has not done so, and Wheeler hasn't let that affect his game. So I would say he's exceeding.
Yeah, to me, Blake Wheeler is a plus one, Drew, and I think this year you could argue that Blake Wheeler's a top five right winger in the NHL. I mean, he's a point per game clip right now, on pace exactly for 82 points. He's definitely going to be on the American World Cup of Hockey team. He'll be on the next Olympic team. Night in, night out, as Richie mentioned, he's the most dynamic offensive player they have right now. He's always creating. Yeah. He hasn't had a single bad game this year, in my opinion. I think he's been the Jets' best player, and he's been their MVP after 24 games.
Matthew Perreault. 16 points so far in 24 games. He's got he only had one goal up until two games ago.
What did he have last year through 20 games?
I think zero goals or maybe one. He struggled at the start of the year last year too.
You know, so when you're not consistent, and people always love the description, well, if he would only be more consistent. Well, if he's always going to be inconsistent, then he's just consistently inconsistent. So, I mean, he's expectations. I didn't expect him to be any better or worse, really. He's been in that range, solid player. I like him. I think he's a good, smart player. He might sometimes have too much responsibility here in terms of the lack of guys to maybe play the role that he plays, especially on the first power play. Again, I like him there based on the roster construction, but there is some pressure. You know, he moves from Washington and Anaheim where he's not playing. There he gets Laffin, Ovechkin, those guys, and he moves in his first power play role. Mm-hmm. But maybe he's a tad miscast. But overall, I think that he has played exactly where you think he'd play. As he's smart hockey player, create offense, and I like the fact that he's shooting more now, but zero on the scale.
Yeah, he's even for me, he's got to shoot more. Absolutely, Rich. He's got one of the best shots on the team. And as Drew mentioned, he's got a couple of power play goals in the last two Jets games. I'd like to give him a plus just for that mustache alone. but I got to go even with Perreault. I mean, sure, you'd expect him to have a few more goals, maybe be around seven or eight goals now on the season. And those goals will come. As you mentioned, he struggled last year and turned it on kind of mid-season. So, I mean, he's third on the team in scoring right now. So you got to give him credit. He's an excellent player. As Rich mentioned, he's got great vision, great setup man, great guy to put out there on the power play. He's probably, you know, their second or third best player to put out there on the power play, I would say, right now after Buff and Wheeler. So, yeah, I'll go even with Perreault.
You mentioned mustache. That allows me the segue to mention that Movember coming to an end in a couple of days. Ezzy's still raising money for Movember, so you can check out his page. I'm sure you can tweet out your link to if you want to give some money to him.
It's not the best mustache, but I'm raising some money and I'm doing my best.
How much you raised so far, Ezzy?
I think I'm around $400 right now.
I'm
just over $400.
True, have you donated yet?
I'm waiting till the 30th. I'm going to put him over the top. Whatever the top is, I'm going to put him over it.
I got to tell you, I don't know what it is, and I've said it, 2 weeks ago, Ezzy, in terms of the Movember, maybe a little bit of that, the sexiness of the fact that it's been done a couple of years now, but the cause is still the same, so it'd be good to give a donation.
Yes, that would be, that's well summed, so give it to Ezzy. You can check out his Movember page on movember.ca, of course, and legalcurve.com also has a link to it, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Mark Scheifele, he's got 8 goals and 5 assists for 13 points in 24 games. Exceeding, matching, below expectations.
I'm matching. You know, I think that he's had spurts in terms of he's creating and scoring goals. I think that's a good thing. That's where I about expected him to be, playing second line center, getting, you know, not in the first power play, but getting pretty good opportunity and getting some soft matchups. That's about where I thought. I don't know if you saw Ken Weeb's article in The Sun.
I did.
He's working with Adam Oates. It's funny because I saw Adam Oates was in the press box the other day, and I was like, why is Adam Oates in the press box?
What also is funny is because a couple weeks ago, on Saturday night, Adam Oates compared
yes,
Mark Scheifele to Steven Stamkos.
Well, I was going to say, there's clarity on two things. Why Adam Oates is in Winnipeg, which is, I thought, odd, just randomly beat a Winnipeg. So that clarifies that. And the other, it clarifies why he would compare him to Steven Stamkos.
Yeah. Probably should have mentioned that before he made the comment on air, but that's another issue.
Or maybe he made
else.
The comment on air and was then brought in to coach him. I think it was actually, I don't know what the timeline was.
Yeah.
But anyhow, I think he's reached expectations. Quickly, though, as you know, I'm not going to make a segment out of it, but we have a lot of segments to talk about this for. Is that kind of weird for the coaching staff? I mean, we heard about it with Adam Oates and Zach Parise and the Minnesota Wild kind of being like, well, what's going on here? They were coaches too.
Yeah.
Or the organization saying, we have guys in place too. Like, you're a guy who's coaching in Jersey, coached in Washington. I think coached elsewhere too.
Was he in Anaheim as an assistant?
He played in Anaheim at least. He might have been his assistant. In any event, the idea that you coach in the league, I mean, you provide TV analysis, and then you're going to coach a player?
Well, when you talk about Adam Oates, you're talking about a guy along with, I would say, Randy Carlyle, who is probably next in line when there's a head coaching vacancy, Richie, at the very
maybe.
Least. I think that he would be someone who might get an assistant coaching position. He was assistant with the Devils last year. But
coach power play and
stuff. You mentioned Minnesota. He was practicing power play with Parise and Suter in the offseason, and Mike Yeo apparently wasn't that happy about it. Mike Russo was the one who reported that, Minneapolis Star Tribune. But I think that is a conflict. I think you would want your players to go to your coaching staff and not go outside the organization, so I could see that.
Or you bring him in.
It's
just kind of it's kind of weird.
Ezzy, quickly, give me your grade on Scheifele before we have to go to break.
Scheifele is meeting expectations. I know he hasn't scored in the last three games here, but you know he got a couple of goals at home against Vancouver last week and scored against Arizona. And I know he's had a few scoring slumps here and there, but you know he's been excellent. I think the biggest difference for me with Scheifele, he's shooting more this year, and he's got one of the better shots, I think, better wrist shots in the league. So I think I want to give him a plus. I think if he had a few more points, maybe I'd give him the plus. But to me, he's meeting expectations. He's been a great second-line center for the Jets this year.
We'll continue this exercise on the other side of the break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Backhanded up along the boards and an outlet for Wheeler. He gets the center and across the line, puts on the brakes, played it back toward the line, wrist shot, Ekstrom scores! Toby Ekstrom, it was deflected in front, but I think it's going to be his goal. And for Toby, his first in 40 games. And the Jets open the scoring. It's 1-0 Winnipeg.
Starting off the second hour of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, continuing with our exercise where we're evaluating each and every Winnipeg Jets player to say if they are exceeding, matching, or below our expectations thus far this season. This segment brought to you by the Riverview Health Center Foundation's Cycle on Life. Illegal Curve Hockey is thrilled to be participating in that event coming up on June the 5th, 2016. Join IC in raising money for the Riverview Health Center by cycling in the event or contributing to Team Illegal Curve. For more information about the Riverview Health Center Foundation's Cycle on Life or to join Team Illegal Curve, visit rhcf.mb.ca.
To prepare for this race, are we going to do any spin class?
Sure.
Because I think that would probably be good. But
we're just going to spin around in a circle, though. It's not going to be on a bike. We're just going to run around in circles, and that'll be good preparation.
When you do spin class, though, is it tough to get your bike from your car to inside the gym, though?
No, you can do it. You can,
or do they just have the bikes already set up there?
Yeah, the bikes are already set up. Okay. They're stationary bikes, but it's a good question. Continuing on with our exercise, Drew Stafford is the next forward up for us to evaluate. At this point in the year, Drew Stafford, let me pull up his stats.
He's got 7 goals, 11 points.
Thank you. 7 goals, 4 assists for 11 points. How is Drew Stafford vis-a-vis your expectations for him thus far?
Guys, I've got him at even, and I would probably have him, maybe if this was done 5 or 6 games ago, I might have him at -1. He was playing on the third line, but he's obviously been promoted, as Drew mentioned, to the second line. And he's doing a really good job, I think, there with Perreault, Scheifele, and Stafford. I think these players really feed well off of each other. And as we know, Drew Stafford is a player who's a natural right winger, Richie, who was moved to the left wing last year because obviously the Jets had a few players that were out of position. Perreault, obviously a natural center. But I'm going to give Stafford an even. He's turned it on here. I realize his plus-minus isn't really good, but plus-minus to me is not the be-all, end-all stat. There's everything else in hockey. It's not just the plus-minus, so don't get fixated with that. But I'll give him an even because I still think, even though he doesn't have the assist totals maybe, he's still been a pretty consistent forward for the Jets.
I think he's been even, too. You know, obviously you said he turned it on. He's a scorer more than anything. He'll have periods of time where he succeeds and doesn't succeed. I think who he played with had was a large contributor to his lack of output early in the season, and I'm not surprised that he's turned it around a bit now. So I think he's even.
Next on our list, Nikolaj Ehlers, the rookie for the Winnipeg Jets. Nice goal yesterday against the Minnesota Wild after he'd been snake bit without one for a number of games. 5 goals, 6 assists, 11 points in 24 games for the Jets so far.
I'll go here quickly. I think he's exceeded expectations as a +1, Drew. Just because in terms of, I know he goes through that goal-scoring slump, but yeah, that's expected, really. It's just when he's been playing well, I think he's really carried the play more than I anticipated him doing this early. So I'd say he'd be a +1. Certainly, I'd seen him before on occasion or two and thought he's very skilled, and so that hasn't really changed, but just his ability to drive the play of his line mates even at times. And I know, obviously, the league adjusts and such, and he's going to have a tough time getting used to that, but I guess still get out of the +1. We're talking about a rookie. We're talking about a young player here.
Yeah, Richie, I also have Nikolaj Ehlers exceeding expectations. We knew that he was going to have some scoring slumps, and maybe we didn't expect his scoring slump to go that long. But as Rich mentioned, he's one of the most dynamic players on this team. We've seen how good his shot is. We've seen him use his speed. Sure, he scores yesterday, gets that big third goal for the Jets, and you know, you'd like to maybe see him have more points, but that's not what it's all about. I mean, he's played second line wing. He's on the third line, obviously, now. They've given him some power play time. Mm-hmm. He even has played a little bit of point on the power play. I mean, this guy, the future is very bright for him. And I think that I had him at a +1. And, you know, you want to say maybe that he hasn't exceeded your expectations maybe because of that scoring slump and when they went on the road and they weren't getting a lot of offense from him. But he was still getting chances, guys. He's got 65 shots. He's leading the Jets right now. He shoots from everywhere. But he just doesn't shoot from everywhere. He shoots with a purpose. Sometimes, you know,
he'll need to change that a bit.
He shoots a little bit too much, but hey, Ovechkin shoots a lot too, and he's pretty good.
He's not Ovechkin, but yeah, he does need to adjust that, but he's young enough that I wouldn't be worried about it right now.
No.
A returning Winnipeg Jet, he'd been away for a couple of years back in the KHL, Alex Burmistrov, 2 goals, 4 assists, 6 points in 24 games for the Jets.
Depends on your expectation of the Wayne Gretzky fan club that he has or what you actually expected. I expected a little bit more from him, but I think it's still in the realm of what he was before, so it's a 0. It's not much worse, Drew. I mean, his game resembles very much the game that left.
Yeah, for me, Burmistrov is a minus. He hasn't met the expectations I had for him. And I think defensively and on the physical aspect of the game, Alexander Burmistrov does a lot of good things, but just I don't think he's provided enough offense that they need on the third line. Two goals and four assists for 6 points in 24 games.
And one of those an empty netter.
Yeah, that's right. So it's just not enough offense.
Scored once out of the box.
Drew, I mean, Burmistrov was supposed to pick up some of the offensive slack that Michael Frolik was leaving, along with Nikolaj Ehlers. Mm-hmm. I think Nikolaj Ehlers has provided that, but I'd just like to see more offensively out of Burmistrov. As Richie mentioned, I don't know that his game has changed enough for me that I think he's someone that you're going to sign long-term, and he's going to be part of the core. Of course, he's only under contract for one more year after this year, but I just think on a lot of nights, Burmistrov has left a little bit to be desired.
Chris Thorburn, 3 goals, 2 assists, 5 points, 24 games played. Got that game-winning goal shorthanded against the Arizona Coyotes a week ago, 7 days ago.
Yeah, well, let me get in there first. It's a plus one for me. He's exceeded expectations. Chris Thorburn's been playing on the third line, as you mentioned. He got the huge goal against Arizona. He's got 3 goals and 5 points. Had an assist yesterday. Actually, an underrated assist. A nice long pass to Nikolaj Ehlers.
Mm-hmm.
So, obviously, Thorburn is a guy that we expect to be on the fourth line for the most part. But he's a guy that has shown time and time again. He's the heart and soul of that dressing room. He can drop the gloves if he needs to. He did that against Cody McLeod the other night against the Avalanche, and he can score some goals. So I think he should be a plus just for that goal against Arizona alone.
Get to that win. I mean, I think it's a plus for me because, you know, your expectations have to be reasonable. And I think so far he's played really well for what he is. And, I mean, the guy scored 7 goals last year, but before that he hadn't scored any more than 4 since 10-11. So he's already got 3.
Adam Lowry, second-year player for the Winnipeg Jets, struggling, hasn't scored yet.
It's clear. I mean, he hasn't scored a goal.
Yeah.
And not only has he not scored a goal, and they moved him to the wing, which we thought might be a good idea, not only has he not scored a goal, but he played with Drew Stafford for a significant period of time, and he didn't score a goal either. And, you know, he's a guy who needs a puck pass to him, and your center, you need to be able to distribute it. He's been a significant disappointment, I'd say. I mean, I think the expectations were a little bit too unrealistic, maybe. But he's still been a disappointment. You can't not score a goal in 24 games and not be a huge disappointment.
Yeah, unfortunately, you guys know I'm a big Adam Lowry fan. He hasn't exceeded expectations. He's a minus one for me. As Richie mentioned, we know he hasn't scored yet. Picked up an assist on Buff's goal yesterday. I thought he had a strong game up the middle for the Jets. But, yeah, I mean, he hasn't been very good offensively. I think his physical game is still there. He's a guy that has the ability to get in on the forecheck and, you know, put someone on their butt and do a lot of good things down low.
He's playing 14 minutes a game, doesn't have a goal.
But he's struggling offensively, and I think he's a guy to me that will be a lot better. He's also struggled at times in the faceoff circle, so he's a minus one. He was a big plus one at this time last year, but unfortunately, you know, he is struggling. So we'll have to see how he does here. I think he'll turn it around, and I don't think we'll be talking about him being disappointing next quarter of the season.
I mean, you look at it quickly. I mean, and he's playing just a little bit more than he was last year. And, I mean, last year, it's not like he tore it up. He got a point basically every 4 games. But it's a big loss having the 11 goals last year. Even a couple goals this year obviously can make the difference if, you know, win or loss. So, as he's ready, he's going to have to get it going.
Andrew Kopp, another Jets rookie, into the lineup playing fourth-line center for the team. He's got 3 points in 20 games.
He's even. He's zero. I mean, I didn't know anything about the guy. I hadn't seen him play. He's playing your fourth-line center role. He's been good in the draw. I mean, I think that's one thing you'll have to like about him for a young player. He's been good in the draw.
52.3% in the faceoff.
That's impressive.
Percentage.
That's an impressive part. I mean, overall, offensively, I don't think you've noticed in many games, if at all. But he's fourth line center. So we'll see. But he's zero so far.
Yeah, by the way, Brian Little's up to 53.6% percent, and that's, I believe, the best of his career. So I think he's having an underrated season in the faceoff circle as well, Drew. Mm-hmm. Andrew Kopp's an even. Andrew Kopp has been very consistent on the fourth line. You know, he's got 3 points, but you weren't expecting him to absolutely tear it up. So he's a guy that, you know, again, he also has that physical element to his game. He's a smart player. Doesn't make a lot of mistakes in his own zone, makes the simple plays. So I'm going to go even. I think Kopp's been good so far in his rookie year.
Anthony Peluso. A lot of people wondering why he's in the lineup for the Jets, but he's become somewhat of a regular.
He's been fine. I mean, zero. I mean, what do you expect from Anthony Peluso? Has he been awful? No. Has he been great? No. Yeah. You know, he's dropped the gloves. And yesterday's fight, like, I don't understand. That's part. You know that I'm maybe surprising people, but I'm for fighting. I'm for fighting, staying in the game. I'm not, but I've said it on the show many times. I don't see any need for a fight like yesterday's fight with Peluso and
Curtis Gabriel.
I'm forgetting his name for a reason. Curtis Gabriel. I mean, that's just an unnecessary fight. I mean, it doesn't do anything. That's not a reaction. Like, I don't mind Tyler Myers jumping in on, was it Zucker? For the hit. It was on Shifley.
On Shifley.
Like, that I don't mind a fight coming out of that, an emotional stick up your teammates, but just fighting for no reason, I just don't see it.
Well, I don't necessarily know it was for no reason. I think the reason that fight happens between Anthony Peluso and Curtis Gabriel is it's a afternoon game, and they're just trying to give their teams, respective teams, a boost, Rich. I don't think there's more to it than that. I think they're just...
You watched the rest of the first period, it didn't work.
Well, I'm just saying that I think it did for the Jets. I think the Jets were the better team in the first period. I'm not saying it had... I'm not saying it had absolutely any impact on the game. I'm just saying that the fight happened because Gabriel, sure, he might be trying to make a name for himself, but they're just trying to give their teams a boost early in a game. I don't think there's anything more to that. I don't think it necessarily has a direct impact on the game.
Give me your rating for Peluso.
Peluso, I'll say even. He's only played 13 games, so he hasn't played the full season. So I'll say even. I think he's been better this year than he was last year.
Nick Petan, to round out the forwards, he played 14 games before he got sent down to the AHL's Manitoba Moose. He has one goal.
I'm going to stay even because I don't think he was given a realistic shot to actually carve out any time with himself for himself here in Winnipeg. I mean, you can't play him on the fourth line with guys who can't create anything and then expect him to create something. The fourth line guys have their job to do, but you're not using a fourth line. Maybe, like, if you had another skill player or two, then you can see what he can do. And sure, he had a little bit of time to create a 5-on-4, but I can't make a judgment really on so far, so I'm going to say kind of an incomplete zero.
Yeah, you can't really give him a complete grade, 14 games, but if we were giving him a grade, I guess it would be below expectations, or not a grade, I guess I would say below because of the fact that he just didn't play much and didn't do much in those 14 games, but you got to give Petan the benefit of the doubt there that he didn't play enough I don't think, like, when he was in the lineup, not just the games he missed, but when he was in there, I just don't think he got enough playing time. And I think that he struggled. But, again, I think, you know, he'll most likely be a big part of this team going forward.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll continue the exercise by looking at the Jets' defense. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by our friends at Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys has become known as the world's best jersey customizer. Keener's knowledge of jerseys is unsurpassed. If you want awesome jerseys for your team or have a jersey you want customized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com or find them on your next opponent. Continuing on with our exercise where we are evaluating the individual Winnipeg Jets players at the quarter mark of the year, if they have exceeded, if they have matched, or if they are below our expectations thus far. We want to hear from you on Twitter, of course, so you can send us your comments about who you think has done well so far. At Pacific Jets fan tells us, after scoring his last goal, Chris Thorburn has already exceeded my expectations for the season. So be like Pacific Jets fan, tweet at us at Illegal Curve with your comments about the Winnipeg Jets players and their expectations. We start with number 33 in our look at the defenseman, Dustin Byfuglien. Exceeded, matched, or below your expectations thus far this year?
I'm going to give you a little preview of my report card because I wrote this out prior to the show. He's my only defenseman that's actually met expectations, and that might surprise a lot of people because he's struggled with the defensive aspect of his game. Had a turnover Richie in the Washington game, which led to a late goal for the Capitals. But to me, you know, after 24 games, he's got 14 points plus 6. He's obviously got the 2 game-winning goals. For me, he's met expectations, and I've said this all along. I think that the Jets should sign Dustin Byfuglien to a contract extension. Whether that ends up being 4 years or 5 years, I've said that he is one of those glue players for the Jets. He's got so many big goals for them over the years. And if you look at it, you know, over the last 6 or 7 years, he's been kind of a 45 to 55 point guy. He's still on pace for right around that. So to me, you know, he could have even more points. He's gotten a lot of opportunities. He could have probably 20 points on the season and be amongst the top scoring defensemen. So to me, he's exceeded my expectations, Drew.
He has exceeded your expectations.
Yep.
He gets a plus one in our ranking system. Richard?
He's a zero. He's a...
matched your expectations.
Yeah, he matched my expectations. I mean, Destin Bufflin, he can create offense. He'll give you a little bit back on his own end. He can be a physical player. He's eaten a lot of minutes up for Paul Maurice here. Some of the struggles of the other defensemen we're going to speak about. So he's matched expectations.
Next on our list is a guy who at one point in time was his frequent playing partner. That's Toby Enstrom. Saw them for a little while this year. Lately, they've been playing apart. Toby Enstrom, and your expectations on him so far?
Yeah, well, for me, it's a minus one.
I was going to ask Richard first, but you know, Mr. Pushy over here.
Yeah, I like him as he wants to get in. I like it. That means he's passionate.
You know, I just thought it was whoever wants to give their opinion. I didn't realize there was an order.
Well,
I thought, you know,
order,
it would
Drew.
Be...
Sorry, we know you're on with Hustler later, but I mean...
Yeah, it would be a little bit better, you know, if we changed it up a little bit, Drew, and kept it exciting for you.
Go.
I know we're not as exciting as Huss, but...
Just go.
He's a minus one for me because not only have the offensive numbers not been there, and this is where I think a plus-minus statistic is misleading. I think Enstrom has struggled big time going up against certain teams' number one lines. And if that's Dallas with the Jamie Benn, Tyler Seguin line, mm-hmm. or he struggled in games earlier this season against the Minnesota Wild up against the Mikko Koivu mm-hmm. line. So I think for me, he's a minus. And, you know, he has struggled on the power play. The Jets' power play has not been as good as it was last year. And he's a guy that they put out quite a bit, regardless if they're going with four forwards and one defenseman. He's usually out there, and I don't think he's been very effective on the power play. And most importantly, he struggled in his defensive zone. And that's why I think it's pretty surprising that his plus-minus stat is where it is. So for me, Enstrom's a minus one.
I have him at zero. I have him at meeting expectations, Ezzy. I think, and you know, I like him a little more than you do, I think, in terms of his game. He does a lot of things, I think, that go unnoticed, and you know, I think lately he's helped Tyler Myers with his game, in my opinion. I can see your points and what you're saying and the issues with him. I do think that the positives do outweigh the negatives, and I think he's been pretty all right. You know, basically what I expect.
And he's taken too many penalties too this year.
You spoke about Tyler Myers. He's next up on our list. How do you think Big 57 has played for the Jets?
In my opinion, he's played better lately. I'm going to give an overall minus one. And remember, I like this idea for the segments we've been doing is based on expectations.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he'd be a little bit better this year. I've seen a little bit of a lack of confidence at times, and I liked how much he joined the play and carried the puck last year. I think you've seen flashes of it this year, but not as much.
He had a good rush, I believe, against Minnesota yesterday.
Yeah, but he's played better with Enstrom, I think, lately. I thought he played a very good game against Washington. I know you might want him to rotate out on the penalty kill there on the Ovechkin goal, but overall, at even strength, I thought him and Enstrom played a real nice game. So I'm going to put him at a minus one. I thought he'd be a little bit better. Not a massive minus, a little bit, and it appears to me that he may have turned the corner. But overall, he's playing 20 minutes a game, 20-plus minutes a game, getting some power play time. I like to see him create a little more offense.
Yeah, well, and speaking of that, I mean, him and Enstrom have the same amount of points, right?
Exactly.
So to me, Myers is even. And sure, the offensive numbers are definitely not there, as Richie said. And when he came over from Buffalo, he was certainly creating more offense, and he still creates offense. That goal against Washington was a big goal, albeit in a losing matter, but it was still an excellent goal. And you'd probably expect him to have a few more goals on the season on the power play. But I think for the most part, as Rich mentioned, he's a guy that goes out there and plays 23, 24 minutes on the top pair. I think he's been pretty consistent this year. And I think overall, Myers has been their best defenseman this year along with Buff.
A player that the Jets fans have been hoping to see some more consistency out of and maybe have high expectations for is Jacob Trouba.
Mm-hmm.
How is he? Where would you grade him?
Well, even? I think this is a pretty big slam dunk here.
It's a minus one?
Yeah, it's a minus one. I would be shocked if Ezzy disagreed, but I'll leave it to Ezzy to speak for himself. His game has just dropped off considerably, and now he's being protected against other teams' top lines, and that surprises me significantly. I wouldn't give up on him by any means, but his game, and I thought he was moving better yesterday, and they were being that tandem was playing a little more physical, I thought, as a group, being a little more aggressive in the way they play, not just physicality, but overall, his decision-making has been poor. His performance has been very shaky. And you can see it by the way the coaching staff is using him. Jacob Trouba needs to be better. He's absolutely a minus one so far.
Yeah, he's a minus one. And this is obviously based on the first 24 games, the first quarter of the season, not anything else, right? It's not last year.
Nope.
It's just this year. So he's a minus one, not only because he hasn't contributed more offensively, but because he's been at times unsure in his own zone. I think, to me, less decisive, less aggressive. And it's unfortunate because I wasn't expecting that this year. So I don't know if it's a nagging injury. I don't know if it's just a slow start. But he's obviously a guy that they're counting on for more, as Rich mentioned. They want him to be a top four defenseman for them. They want him to be more of an impactful player on the power play. And he hasn't been. So I'm expecting him to definitely have a better second quarter of the season. But the first quarter, I mean, let's be honest, it's been disappointing.
Jacob Trouba's playing partner is Mark Stewart. How would you evaluate Mark Stewart's game?
What do I think of Mark Stewart's game? I mean, Mark Stewart's game is Mark Stewart's game. How much has it changed? He hasn't played very well, Drew. But, I mean, how well did you think he was going to play?
Well, that's the question. Is he matching your expectations? Is he below them?
How high were my expectations, I guess, is the question. I was kind of grappling back and forth. You know, what do I really think here on the Mark Stewart one? I'm going to say zero because he really... My expectations aren't particularly high for him, but I don't think he's paid particularly well either.
Yeah, he's meeting my expectations, and you don't expect Mark Stewart to be one of your top offensive defensemen, but you expect him on a nightly basis to be very good defensively, blocking shots.
Yeah.
He's had many big hits, especially at the blue line this year. Remember the Jonathan Toews one in October? That was a big one. So he leads the tone physically for this team, along with guys like Dustin Byfuglien and Adam Lowry. So he's struggled absolutely defensively, but I wouldn't say that he hasn't met my expectations because he's still been pretty solid defensively, and he's been a guy that they've put out there, you know, against other teams' top competition. So I absolutely think he's been someone who's been around even.
The sixth defenseman spot for the Winnipeg Jets have been split up this year between Ben Sherratt, Adam Partey, and Paul Postma. We'll start with Sherratt. He's played most of the games.
As he maybe want to disagree here, but I know we're up against, we have Marty Biron coming. Can we kind of evaluate those guys as a three? I mean, that's really a zero to me. Maybe Sherratt's been a bit up and, you know, going down, obviously, before he came out of the lineup. He played pretty well at the beginning or a couple games. Overall, I mean, have we seen enough of any of these guys to think they've been more pluses or minuses? I think they're all zero.
Well, I would say Ben Sherratt for me is a minus.
Okay.
As far as Adam Partey and Paul Postma go, those would be evens. But for me, you know, Ben Sherratt has definitely been a guy who struggled with his confidence, and that's one of the reasons why I think he's not in the lineup right now, and Adam Partey's in there more a veteran guy. Not saying that I'm not a fan of Ben Sherratt. I think Ben Sherratt is an excellent young defenseman. I think just, you know, his reads and some of the decisions he's made, you know, have been suspect. So that's why he's a bit of a minus. But overall, I think the big thing here is the defense as a whole is a minus.
Yeah,
it has not met my expectations. Right now, they're second last in the NHL in goals against. That's a team stat. They got to be better defensively. Mm-hmm. So as a whole, they're not meeting my expectations of what I thought they would be this year.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll bring in Marty Biron, TSN, RDS, NHL Network analyst. And still to come, we're going to evaluate the goaltending, the management, coaching, and the Jets special teams. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.